Hello and welcome to another episode of the Creative Weirdos Podcast. Thank you all for hanging out for another week and a wonderful conversation with a very new friend, Darcy Stantonforth. Darcy is a wonderful, wonderful thinker in the world of the weird. We get to talk about everything from her work with students and media to death and Ram Dass and a million other things. Darcy is the host and producer of the Mysteries Decoded podcast, a beautiful TEDx speaker. I highly recommend her TEDx talk on death. It's so good. As well as a ghost host, lecturer, writer, music, film, a million other things. We get to talk about a lot of it, how it all relates to creativity and weirdness. Go check out all of Darcy's work linked below. And thank you for being here. If you want more of this stuff, I have the Patreon and shop linked below. And I'll talk to you next week. Have a great day. Bye. On this episode that we can go back to in some regards, or maybe
totally.
I'm sure plenty of other good stuff to talk about. But Darcy, thank you so much for being here. I am really stoked. I'll do a full proper introduction before the episode after we're done recording and everything. But thank you for being here. And you just brought up so many topics that I absolutely love. But let's stick with what we were just talking about here for a second, because I think it is super interesting. And since you have some interaction with the youth these days, the youth, right? Like my reference point is a 6-year-old, which is very skewed. Like I still have some control and he's not fully finding his own culture and everything yet, but I'm super interested in that next couple levels of age range and everything. And you just brought up the fact that your students weren't even familiar with what an album is, and that starting from that point of explaining essentially how different culture and how fast it's changed has got to be difficult. Because when you explained that, the other thing I was just thinking about is how that's got to impact the way artists are making things. The way things are distributed is always going to impact. Like the single started because radio stations were the way to make money, and that's how the whole music industry kind of started that we know of. But that changed and went to full album production because that was the thing to make money off of, because essentially record players became a household item, and all of the technology has always pushed these different movements. And now we're in the streaming age, right, where kids have no use and artists have no use for making full albums. Like it probably is more beneficiary for an artist to have a hit, a slew of singles instead of make one solid album, because of exactly that kids aren't consuming a front to back 1-15 track album, right? And that's got to change the creative process and everything else when you get.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I'm so stoked to be here.
Sorry to jump right in.
No, you're good. You're good. When I first was introduced to you through other mutuals who brought us to this point, I was like, yeah, Todd's my people. This is going to be great.
Yeah, I talked to Steve this morning, and he made sure to tell me to tell you he said hi. I missed a podcast. I was supposed to record with him yesterday, and I completely wrote the wrong date down in my calendar, and it was a silly mistake. But I got to talk to him this morning, and he was stoked to hear that we were talking today.
That's awesome. I love Steve. Steve is one of my newer buddies and favorite people, and then I get other newer buddies from this, so this is great. So
it's the best. He's a great connector too. He's a really nice, I've been familiar with you a little bit before hearing you on his podcast, but honestly that episode was what made me reach out to you. I was like, I felt the same way, like listening to you two talk, I was like, I got to talk to Darcy. This is someone that's going to be a blast to hang out with.
Awesome. I'm so stoked to be here. So what you're talking about with physical media and how people are recording all this, Best Buy, I just got to point out this tidbit of news. Best Buy just removed all remaining physical media from all their stores.
Whoa.
So you cannot go into a Best Buy and buy a CD or a DVD any longer.
Wow.
Okay. So think about that one, right? And, you know, you're talking about maybe not an album, but a single. And then I take it a step further because I think I'm on TikTok. I'm not a huge content creator on TikTok by any means, but part of why I fought TikTok for a while. Like my colleagues at work were like, join TikTok, come on, we'll send you stuff. And I was like, no, especially during the pandemic. I'm like, no, I'm fine. I have plenty of other, I have books. Like,
yeah.
So I could draw, like I have other things I can do. I finally gave in. But I also realized that by engaging with TikTok, I could be aware of how my students are being messaged and how they're being reached. And a lot of artists will have their clip used for what, 15 seconds, 20 seconds, and all of a sudden they have a hit on their hands, right? Wow. And so they have, like, I think Sirius or like Sirius FM has an entire TikTok channel where it's just songs that are popular on TikTok.
Whoa, that's amazing.
Right. So thinking about how they're being messaged, where they've watched, you know, a bunch of videos, because that's the addictive part of TikTok, right? The continual scroll. There's never an end to it. I've heard this loop over and over again. I've heard this snippet of a song over and over. And so then they go, oh, I know this song. And they know the song because they've heard 15 seconds of it. Right. And I found that most recently because I'm a huge fan of the band Idols. Like, I love Idols so much. Absolutely. They're so good. And they have a new album coming out and they're on TikTok. And their song for Dancer, the same. So by the time I heard the full song, I was like, oh, I feel like I've heard this song already. I hadn't heard the full song. I'd heard that little clip. Right. And my students are just not like, I was with honor students this past semester, and they're all very bright and they're very, you know, connected in like certain ways and not connected in others. But I'm also older than them, right? So I have a cultural wealth of knowledge that they don't have. And one of the things when I asked them to write a paper on an album they loved, and they had to justify why they loved it. So I said, pick an album. And then I gave them questions to consider as they were thinking about this album. So is this album political? Is this album, did it receive, you know, critical acclaim, or what critiques did you, I made them include critiques of the album if they found it. And so I had them think about these questions. And with the political question, I had one student choose The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. And I have them do a lot of pre-writes before. So they're thinking about these questions and they're going to take these questions, put them into a paper. And in that pre-write, it was like, in that reflection, oh, this isn't a political album. And I was like, what? What? I was like, hi, this is absolutely a political album.
Wow.
I need you to do a little bit more research. And then when he and I were talking about it, he was like, well, because he is African-American, the student, and he was like, well, yeah, but I mean, it's like she's doing, you know, she's just expressing herself as an African-American. I'm like, that's political. The personal is political.
Yeah.
So yes, this is a political album. And so just to watch kind of that. And then another student chose Hozier's new album. And that little Irish songster, he's not little, like I shouldn't do it. Like he's just, I like Hozier is, he does some things to all of this. And there's a song in which he's talking, he's clearly talking about the IRA. And she's like, I don't think it's political. I'm like, so I need you to research the history of Ireland a little bit.
Yeah,
like,
just a little political.
You know, and so, but again, I also understand that I have, you know, this longer cultural history, right? Like
absolutely.
Over here watching the funeral and the performances from Shane McGowan's funeral only a few weeks back, and watching, you know, Nick Cave perform, and watching, you know, other amazing artists like sing for Glenn and or sing for Shane. Glenn Hansard's in there, and people kept not announcing him. And I'm like, Glenn Hansard's right there. Like, he's such an amazing artist. But again, like these beautiful, beautiful. Here's Irish politics in one church, right?
Absolutely.
Because Shane McGowan was very political about those things. But they have no idea. They're like, who's that guy?
Yeah.
Who's that? But then I also ask on the other side, like, I definitely don't want to be the person who's just like, you kids don't know.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, educate me. And I told them, and I made good on this, that whatever albums they, you know, wrote their paper on, I would listen to that whole album. So as I sat and I graded their paper, I put on headphones and I just listened to whatever album, and I discovered some new artists because of it, which was awesome.
That's so
and
cool.
Other stuff, I was stoked like that they chose it. Like one of my students chose Fiona Apple's Bolt Cutters, and I was like, yeah, all right.
That's awesome.
You know, we're getting serious. And then another student had, because they chose Kendrick Lamar, which is great. I've done academic work on Kendrick Lamar. I love Kendrick Lamar. But then, you know, someone chose like Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd. And I'm like, okay, all right. We're dad and talking about her dad taking her to Roger Waters concerts and all these things. And I'm like, all right.
That's really
so
cool.
I still feel hopeful.
Yeah,
and
no,
we
absolutely.
Can continue to teach each other. But like I introduced them, this whole class, because we're talking about music, I introduced many of them to Johnny Cash because we were talking, and then Nine Inch Nails because we were talking about how versions of songs can change the meaning. So I had to show them, I showed them Hurt, and then I showed them Johnny Cash's version of Hurt. And I was like, how many of you have heard of Nine Inch Nails? No hands.
Whoa.
How many of you have heard of Johnny Cash? Like one hand.
Wild.
And then we talked about Hallelujah, who most of them only know because of Shrek. So they know Rufus Wainwright's version. I don't even know that they know it's Rufus Wainwright.
Yes,
but then I'm like, okay, here's Leonard Cohen's version, which they just looked at me like, that's this song? And then I'm like, and then I showed them Jeff Buckley's version, which is my favorite version of that song. And to just watch them like, oh, okay. Like start to, again, widen their worlds a little bit and think about things a little larger.
Man, yeah. That's so beautiful. And there's like five different roads I want to go down with you.
Let's
and
I do
mean,
it.
I mean, bringing up Hallelujah, I mean, some of the stuff you just brought up are like what I like to call the goosebump inducers. And like, that's what I chase my whole, like, I remember getting those goosebumps for the first time from just listening. And it was 100% Dookie, like listening to Green Day and like having these bumps form on my skin and this feeling and being like, what's that? Like, what is that feel? Like, how is this thing I'm listening to making me have a physical reaction? And like that, I remember very early on being like, I don't know what I want to do, but I want to make myself and others feel that way. And like, there's just these very specific, like, artists and songs and comics, and like it can be found in any media and it can be found in any, so many other aspects of life. But it's really interesting to me, like playing with that idea with a generation that I'm so unfamiliar with, right? Like what gave them the goosebumps for the first time? And like, what, like, do they get it from the stuff you're introducing to them? And like, is it the type of thing where like, because you know, it's like that cliche of you get really excited about a song and you force your friend to listen to it. And you're like, no, but didn't you hear that lyric? Did you hear that? Like, you know, you hear that bass line or whatever it is that's doing it for you. And they're just like, yeah, dude, whatever. Like, that's fine. Like, is it that reaction in a classroom setting, or are some of them like, oh, yeah, like I get what Leonard Cohen means now. Like,
it was interesting because when we listened to the different versions of the different songs, I would then ask them afterwards, like, which version did you like better? And can you name why you liked it better?
Yeah.
And sometimes they would be like, oh, I didn't like the background singers in this, or I don't like how they brought this in. Because the book we were reading for that, which was the 33 and a third on Celine Dion's Let's Talk About Love album. And if listeners have not checked out the 33 and a third series, they're great. But she does, I'm not going to remember the name. She does a cover on that album. Hold on a second. Now I got to look this up because my brain is, Okay. On that album, she does, I mean, there are some songs on there that are just like, that they liked, that I was really like, you like that? Oh, she covers When I Need You by Leo Sayer on that album.
Wow.
So I had, they had to, before we even started reading the book, I had them listen to the whole Celine Dion album. And then they don't know When I Need You as a cover. So that's how we got started on that combo, is we played Celine's version, and then we listened to Leo Sayer's version and watched the video of him in the 70s in like a big old cozy sweater, just being sad, like walking down the beach and singing. And so asking them like, whose version did you like better? So then we moved into Hurt and by Johnny Cash and Nine Inch Nails, right? Very different songs.
Oh yeah.
When it came to that song, most of them like Johnny Cash better. And I was like, why do you like it better? And they're like, I don't know, I just do. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that's them experiencing the goosebump moment without understanding why. Like, they're not like, well, when the harmonics, like they're not getting music theory.
And none of that matters. That's the best part, is that not understanding why is the aha moment in that situation. Because like, I feel like I spent my life being like, well, is it like this specific bass line or this chord progression or this harmony or these like combination of people or all these different, and it's none of that. It's put your finger on a bowl.
Yeah. And then with Hallelujah, most of them were not, Leonard Cohen, I think, was a little much for them so far, which is okay, which is all right.
Yeah. He's because a little much.
I love Leonard Cohen, and I think Leonard Cohen wrote some of the most powerful storytelling songs, because I tend to be very lyrics based. If I can identify something in a song, it's lyrics based. But then there's other stuff where I'm like, I just love the way this sounds, because I am not a musician at heart. I love music, but it's not how my brain operates.
Yeah.
And so when it came to Hallelujah, there was a pretty like even split between Wainwright's version and Jeff Buckley's version.
That's awesome.
And I think, you know, I don't know exactly, because some of them were like, well, I like this, or I'm more familiar with the Wainwright version because Shrek. Yes. this generation obsessed with Shrek. And I don't know if that's because of TikTok. I don't know what it is, but they are obsessed with Shrek. And but the Jeff Buckley version, for those who got that, like who were like, that's the one for me, it was also, I think, a goosebump moment for them. Because so there's cool. that pain and that emotion in that song. And at the very, you know, on the recorded version on the album, where he just does that big like sigh exhale at the beginning, like,
yes.
And you're like, oh, this person is in their feels so much, and they're about to sing it to us. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be, and Buckley did so much of that, right? Jeff Buckley, another artist that we lost very young.
Too young.
And I used to work for Henry Rollins, and Henry and I were driving around one day, and we were talking about Jeff Buckley. We just started talking about him. He goes, that guy always kind of had a cloud over him. Oh. He's like, you knew something was up there. So like, he was almost saying like, it wasn't a surprise, but he's like, that guy always had a cloud about him. And I was like, yep, I get that.
Absolutely. Wow. That's amazing. All right. I have to talk to you about working with Henry Rollins at some point in this conversation, but before we get there, I see, it's so funny, Darcy, because I want to go so many paths with you. Like, I want to start talking about comics with you. I want to talk way more about music with you, and I also want to talk about like your work in end of life and your interest in people like Ram Dass and stuff, because it's been such a large fascination. But the one thing I want to kind of start transitioning from this part of the conversation that's interesting to me that you mentioned a minute ago is about how kids or people these days interact with like 15 seconds of a song more than they do the actual song. And they find these things from clips and stuff, and how that, like, there's been a theme in when I've been talking to guests recently about people not reading anymore, even professors being like, I don't read. I have trouble like sitting down with a full book now. And like, you know, that's that attention span deficit or whatever you want to call it. Like, I haven't thought about it in the regards to music, but it's probably harder for people to sit down and listen to an album front to back now than it ever has been. And that like was one of my favorite ways to pass the time, like forever since I was 13 and had like a Discman. Like that was like my favorite thing to do, was just sit there and listen to something from and like I still do it while I'm drawing all the time, and I still can. But man, that's probably something that is also kind of falling victim to that attention loss or whatever you want to call it. And that's interesting.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that there's such a difference again about how they're consuming media, right? Because I know for myself growing up, for you growing up, I'm sure like we knew an album was coming out.
Yeah.
And we were excited to go get that. We went to a place to
on
get
Tuesday.
That album, right? Like, here it is. Or I think about the nights at like Tower Records or a record store where they'd have like a listening station, and you'd go and all of a sudden you discover something and you're like, I gotta hear all of this, right? And so even in the time, because you know, with vinyl, you didn't really skip songs. Cassettes, I fast forwarded too much or I wrote on too much. Like CDs is really the first time we were able to kind of skip through. But I feel like for so many of us, we'd still listen to that album front to back. Then, of course, there was always the possibility of a secret song, you know, seven minutes after the album ends or whatever. I think about Green Day, I think about Tool. Like all of a sudden we're like
classics, absolutely.
You know,
very and different so, secret songs, but very
very different secret songs. But secret songs, right? And this generation will not understand the secret song, or like the I think the closest they might come is like a extra scene after movie credits end, right?
Yes, that's a great parallel, totally.
And so, you know, we were excited about it, and you'd still listen to the album all the way through. And then maybe there'd be a song that like, this is not my favorite one that they're doing. And you'd skip ahead of that, but you listen to the album. Like I still albums that I love, I still think about them in order. Like I'll hear a song, even though it's just like on the radio or something, like, and then radio. What? I'll hear it in Trader Joe's or whatever. And then, you know, my brain goes, oh, the next song after this is, you know, whatever the next track listing is. And so I think for them, they've not really had that experience. And then the attention, you know, the having a hard time sitting. It's because everything's so noisy all the time, all the time. And I was just watching, and I'm not going to remember names because I literally watched him once, but there is a monk who lives in Europe, and he's like this big, tall, bicked head, like bearded dude who like I've created a whole backstory for. Like I was like, he had great loss and now he's just decided that he will live this monk lifestyle. But he's showing his life, a year in the life of the monk, and he will show, it'll all be silent for the first, you know, chunk of the video. And then he does like a reflection at the end, and he lets people know he's putting at the end in case that's not what they're there for, which I also appreciate. But in the video I was watching the other day, he was talking about how this other like mystic or scholar or religious person or monk, I don't remember, like this makes for bad podcasting right here.
You're doing my job. This is usually me being like this mystic, this
guy. There was a guy and he said some things.
Yep.
But talking about the idea of we have such a hard time sitting in a room in silence.
Yeah.
And because we're so used to noisiness, we're so used to all these things. And then it's hard for us to sit with ourselves and our own thoughts and our own clarity.
Yes.
And, you know, my students, will never know what it is to have to sit and get your oil changed with no phone.
Yeah.
Or to sit in a doctor's office and go like, oh, I guess I have to read this People magazine from 6 years ago or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Like, and so I think we're just so, we're so inundated with noise all the time. And that I think is where that mindfulness disconnect comes in, because, you know, I have a phone so someone could try and reach me at any time. And then there's the TVs on and then I can listen to that. Like, there's so many ways we can connect in. Where I think growing up, you had to kind of seek out media. You had to go and say like, oh, I'm going to watch this TV show now because it's on at this one time a week. And if I don't have access to the VCR or even pre-VCR or, you know, recording devices, you missed it. It was done forever. And it felt monumental to you, right? Like, oh, yes. No, I've missed that. But I think now we can access anything all the time. I can watch a full movie on my phone if I want to. I don't choose to watch movies that way. But thinking about all these things, it becomes hard for us to sit and give our attention to anything because everything wants our attention. I'm guilty of the same thing. Like, I'm not sitting here being the mindfulness queen of like,
no,
I really just, I'm able to shut everything up. Like, that's not who I am. I would like to be.
Sure. Me too.
But
me too.
I have to remind myself, like, hey, it's okay for quiet right now.
Yes.
Like, why? And there are times, and I'm extroverted, like, huge surprise. I know all your listeners are like, what? No. But I also get overwhelmed, overstimulated. And there are times that I just need quiet. And I just need it to not, I need to be disconnected. I need to not be needed. I need to not, because I also do, outside of teaching, I do, work with select groups of students in my everyday. And a lot of them, it can be highly emotional work because I work with a number of students who have traumatic pasts. And so I have to be aware of how much I'm putting out in the day. And sometimes like I just need a moment after I think it's going to be a conversation about grades. And then all of a sudden they're, you know, reliving some trauma.
That can like be that's intense.
It can be really intense, right? So I think that like we are what anthropologists refer to as digital immigrants. Like we grew up without the internet at first, and then the internet came. Mm-hmm. And then we immigrated to the internet.
Yep.
This generation has the generation before have all grown up with the internet. They all have had the internet from day one. And so the idea of not, I don't know if that is even something that, like, it's almost like, well, you can't have your tablet right now. You can't have your phone. Oh, what? Yeah. Like, I'm being punished. Like, no, it's good to disconnect.
Yes.
It's good to go out and connect with nature. And then we look at folks who, like, one of my best friends and one of my favorite people on this planet has no social media. He's like, I just don't. And I'm like, talk to me about that magic.
Yeah.
You know, and I use it more for like, I'm gonna post pictures of my dog and things I like. And then I use it as a promotional tool for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily have that luxury. I mean, I guess I could have that luxury more, but you know, but we look at that person societally. Oh, you're weird for not wanting to be connected all the time.
Yes.
Oh, like I'd probably be a lot healthier if I wasn't connected all the time.
It's so true. I was just revisiting an old comic by Simon Henselman, of Meg and Mog fame, where it was exactly that, where Meg is just she's horribly depressed and refuses to deconnect. And like, it's this beautiful couple pages of her like going for a hike, but staying, you know, watching whatever she's watching on the phone and then getting home. And like Al being like, yeah, you should really just stop and let's have a conversation for a minute. And she's like, if there's silence, my brain will eat itself. And it's like, that's what everybody is feeling all the time. And it's funny because I know there's truth to things when it can be found in places like monks that are living a monastic lifestyle, or somebody like Simon Henselman, which might be the exact opposite of any kind of a monk or a spiritual person in that regard, but has the same insights. And I think there's so, even in the morning, I was telling you, I get up around like 3:30 or so, like to start my day without, like, in a quiet house. And like, that's when I do my drawing and like when I really try. And for the most part, I try to force myself to do that quiet. Like I try, mm-hmm. but like, it is like my instinct is to wake up and grab the headphones, like to make a cup of coffee and try and put on a podcast. And I have to stop myself and be like, why are you doing this? Like, you're just going to, no, like, don't do this now, because it's like not, you don't have to do it. And it's, I think there's so much truth to that whole transitional generation and having kids that, you know, are growing up with this connection and this, like, it's a very interesting form of dichotomy that they're introduced to at a very young age, because they feel more connected than ever, especially pandemic kids like my kids, where like,
oh, yeah,
for 2 years, like the phone was how they connected to family and how they connect. Like, so like now to be like, no, we have to connect in real life more and like do like push for these things. And then to see them in person and respond to those like dopamine hits of seeing the body language and those like eye contact moments. And it's like, oh, this is so important. Like, this is what we're meant to be doing 100%.
It's so important. And so what is fascinating about the idea of more connected than ever, right? Because also so a couple things I want to hit on that you were just talking about. It's like, one, more connected than ever, but the studies are showing higher rates of depression, higher rates of feeling disconnected, right?
Yes,
because
exactly.
Language has changed because of social media. Because you think about like going way back, right, to Facebook, you know, we had MySpace before that, LiveJournal, all those things. But like Facebook, oh, we're friends on Facebook, yeah. Right? But are you really friends, right? And understanding what like a person I've connected with versus an acquaintance versus like a real friend. So like that language has changed, and we have an understanding of it being older that they will never have, or they won't have in the same way. Maybe never have is too strong, but like they won't understand in the same way.
Yes.
Likes, you know, oh, I love that. Like putting a heart on thing means liking things, but also so does thumbs up, like all of these different emojis that communicate.
Yes.
But then talking about those dopamine hits of in-person interaction, and like my students this past semester spent their really freshman, sophomore, junior years in lockdown. Like three really critical years in lockdown. Yeah. And the social anxiety I have seen come out of these students. And I get social anxiety. I get socially anxious when I'm going into new places. Am I dressed right? Am I like, don't nervous talk? Like it runs, I run the gamut with all that stuff. But to watch them not know how to interact with each other, and to not, like, I'm used to in years past going into a classroom, everyone's chatting. They just sit there and they're just not talking.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I've seen, and a friend of mine theorizes this has to do with like, as here in California, until you're 18, you can't have anybody extra in your car, like as a teenager. I don't know if that's like nationwide
now.
Same
here.
Okay.
I don't know if it is, but it's same in Delaware.
But like all these, I know how hungry I was to get my driver's license, right? Like I got to get my driver's license so I can go meet my friends at the coffee house or at the wherever we're hanging out, someone's house. And like, if I didn't have my license, does someone else have a car, like can pick me up? They're just waiting and waiting. I have students 18, 20 who still don't drive because in a lot of sense, they don't need to, because they can, we talk all the time. I see them so all true. The time on social media, on Zoom, on Twitch, on Discord, all these things. That's and so idea. It's just this change that we're seeing happen about how we socialize. And I think it ties into something you and I were talking about too before we started recording, about the inability to disagree civilly or to have argumentative discourse, because I feel like there are things people will say to me online they would never say to my face.
100%.
Right? And we see trolls and things like that. Like, you know, you've made it when people start trolling you. And I don't know how much that feels made it, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I do. 100%.
But at the same time, like, people I've known in person, known, interacted with, socialized with, been in community with, that suddenly, because they're behind a keyboard, are saying just horrendous stuff.
Yes.
And then also still trying to meet that with compassion and say, like, hey, I'm going to set a boundary here, but I also know you wouldn't say that to my face.
Yeah, yeah, no, 100%. Wow. Yeah, again, so many things that I want to go down here and like a million. Wow. Okay, so that's super interesting for two reasons. I'm going to start here. My buddy, he has kids slightly older than me, like a freshman in high school, or maybe he's a sophomore in high school, something in that area, right? And he's blown away because, like, for him and for us, probably for me at least, like on a Friday night as a sophomore in high school, it was anything to be out of the house.
With,
like, we were hanging out in parking lots. I was going to shows at that point. So it was usually a show, a parking lot, a diner, and then home by three or something like that. And like that was, I think by my junior year, we started having like AOL Instant Messenger and stuff that we'd get on at like 3 a.m. after the diner.
Totally.
And interact that way and like live journal posts and all that fun stuff. Right. But he was saying, his kids don't even ask to go out on the weekend. Like they'll just as much opt to play a shared game of whatever on Twitch and stay in and not have that push for what I always saw as like a push for independence. And like,
yeah,
getting that license was huge. Like I did some really dumb shit when I started hanging out with kids that had licenses and I got my license and all that I should probably have gotten in way more trouble for. But like, it's interesting how culture, it seems, has always kind of been, or has had a consistent theme of pushing back these like big initiation points as we grow up, right? Like it seems,
yeah,
like cultures used to have more of these, like you're this age at 12 and we have this big initiation process, and you can see it in like some religions and stuff still there. And I always saw like the Western teenage initiation process being that driver's license, being the hunt for that freedom, and to see that kids don't see it that way anymore for probably a million reasons is super interesting to me. And like that kind of just being as happy at being at home and experiencing people digitally, there is something that's really weird about that. And again, I say a lot of stuff like this on the show, and I always try and be like, it's not that I'm saying that's a negative or that it's like 100% like going to create a bunch of like emotionally unstable weirdos or something in the future. I don't think it's anything like that, but it is a different way that we're interacting with each other these days, and it is it from a distance, and even from a very young age, it seems like we're losing that like push to be around each other and like to kind of not only be around each other, but to kind of push, I don't want to say social taboos, but to kind of like sow your oats and like get out there and like, you know, let some of that stuff out at an earlier age and like kind of like, you know, experience things in a different independence, I guess is what I'm going for.
Yeah. And I think part of it too, and I saw someone talking about this online, just like a random, again, random TikTok video the other day, but the idea that, you know, we don't really have a lot of physical, what they call the third place anymore. Ooh. And so for people who are not, you know, familiar with the idea of the third place, like home is your first place, work or school is, yes, your second place. And there's always a third place. You talk about the diner. Oh, yes. We had a place here called Earl's. On their sign, it said open 25 hours a day. Like, so that was the place that had the patio that people could smoke, but you're also ordering like a burger at 3 a.m. after hanging out with your friends at the coffee house or whatever, right? Coffee houses, all these things. The third place in the physical world, I feel like, does not exist so much anymore. I think it has moved online, Discord, yeah, Twitch, things like that. And so, but in that third place, there's also less separation, right? You're not leaving your room. You're not leaving your house. And I really miss the physical third place. I miss the coffee house to go to. I miss the, you know, I guess like bars could be a third place for people. Yeah. But like, I also feel like with the pandemic, so, and this is a good shift in a way with, you know, capitalism and everything. Like I've seen a lot of places close earlier now. Like people don't feel like you need feel the need to stay open. A store doesn't need to stay open until 10 o'clock at night. It can close at 8. It can close at 9. Totally. You know, things. So it's like, okay, we're getting maybe a little bit more work-life balance. But it's weird to me seeing that, like, I don't have a late night coffee shop or a coffee house around me. No. I don't have a place that I can be like, I just want to go take a book or my sketchbook or whatever and just chill and have some conversation and have a cup of coffee or just hang out and do, like, that seems to have gone out of fashion. And so I think that also changes it a lot. Like, I don't, you know, I don't, I also outside of a, and even this is when you know it's really changing again, staffing and like the pandemic brought a lot of things, but like when not all Denny's were open 24 hours a day because they couldn't staff it.
Yes. Yes.
That's 100%. A cultural shift.
Dude, 100%. And the diner is a great example. There's probably four diners for some reason that have opened up recently in Delaware right around me, but none of them are 24 hours. None of the, so I'm like, you guys aren't diners. Like, you're not, like, if, unless you're 24 hours, like, there's no reason to call yourself a diner. But it is super interesting how those third spaces that are where you make those community interactions and you have those, like, kind of, like, community weirdos that you know just from the coffee shop or from, like, those connections are so special and so, like, I think a lot about one of my favorite thinkers, Doug Rushkoff, and he talks a lot about this reinvestment in local community in a way that will actually like not fix problems all the way, but could actually like solve a lot of these weird things that we've run into that capitalism has kind of incentivized and creating. And my favorite example that he uses is the idea of a drill, right? Like most people in America have had an instance where they have to hang a picture and they don't have a drill. So what do? They go to Home Depot and they buy a $30, $40 drill. They use it once and then it sits in a closet. And the next time they go to use it, they've lost the charger. It doesn't work for some reason. It's cheap. It broke, whatever. Then they have to go buy a new drill when the whole time they could have just gone to their neighbors and been like, hey, can I borrow a drill? And then maybe that might mean that you have to like invite that neighbor over for a bar. Like that might cause interaction. And that's what people want to avoid. But that interaction is also what could lead to like, hey, my kid needs tutoring help in math and you're really good at this. Can you help? Like, there's these connections that we're missing on a very local point that also reinforce this giant capitalism state. Like he uses lawnmowers as another example that I love. He's like, there's no reason for every house on the block to have a lawnmower. Use it for an hour a week. Why can't like every three houses have a lawnmower and you just share, you know, like, but we are not that type of culture that was brought up with those communal. We're kind of more afraid of asking the neighbor for things than ever. And like doing little things like that, like asking to borrow a drill could like completely change not only your personal life, but it could reshape industries. And I love that because it's so like small and actionable and
totally. And thinking about the, it's also thinking about like the self, like, oh, I have to be self-reliant. I have to be the one in charge as opposed to we have survived this long because of community.
Yes.
And I think that we, even the introverts need community, right? It may not be a huge community, but like you, and like you said, finding those other weirdos, like that is part of what I love about online is because I have found all the people that I was like, oh yeah, we totally would have been friends. And, you know, I say this a lot, but because it's for so long being like the weird kid, if you didn't have other weirdos around you, you were like, they're like, oh, she's a little different. That's fine. They're a little different. Fine. But at the same time, like you said, like some of my best friends met at late night coffee houses.
Yeah.
You like absolutely. That? You have that band t-shirt, you have a patch on, whatever, like whatever that is.
Yes.
And then
yes.
You decided one night, like, oh, we're going to go to this place. Do you want to come? Yes. And then you went to the place. Yep. Right. And you had that community, absolutely. You had that space and that drive. And I can remember like pushing curfew, like, oh, we're just going to be, we're just going to be just, I just need an hour more. Like, just please.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Absolutely. And thinking about those kinds of spaces, like, you know, I joke with my students all the time. I'm like, watch Dateline, don't end up on Dateline. And I think about all the spaces where I'm like, remember the time we just found that abandoned house in the hills and then we like broke into it and we just spent the night like making a fire pit and like nobody came for us? What?
Yes,
the grown up me is like, I don't think we should break into places, but like at the same time, I'm like, but we could. And maybe that's why paranormal investigation is so fun, because like getting to be in spaces we're not supposed to be and doing weird stuff. That's what I did as a teenager.
Absolutely. And it's half the appeal of like going, like when I would start going to shows in the late 90s as a teenager, and like I used to like go to a very, it's still not the safest, I guess, part of Wilmington, but I remember like being dropped off in this little city that I'd never been to at this little cafe and experiencing like a lot of unhoused people for the first time.
Sure.
A lot of these things that were very kind of frightening to a 13-year-old little suburb kid that like hadn't, and but that was part of what made that magic. Like that was part of what made the whole thing so special and so indelible. And I mean, it is harder to find those spaces, and some of that, like, I don't want to say danger, but like some of that kind of like fringiness that you could find. I mean, like, I spent the majority of my youth hanging out in parking lots because there was nowhere else to hang out. And like, I don't know if there's parking lots you can do that in anymore. Like, if that's like a thing that you could, I don't see kids just doing that, but there is something that is special to, and that like that mix of like very fun and fear and all of that, that seems like it parallels with a paranormal investigation and all of that stuff so well. And what you just said, like, well, two things that I want to say real quick. One, the whole idea that we evolved this independence and this like me, myself point of view and everything is like, it's very important as humans, right? Like, I always think of, there's several people I've heard that like, you know, talk about the ego and how like ego disillusionment's this whole goal and everything. But then you hear somebody like Ram Dass be like, no, like if you don't have an ego, you don't know where to bring the fork. You don't know which mouth to bring the fork to. Like, we need an ego to like knows and guide certain things. So like those things are important, but that recognition that we are not at the center of it all is so profound, and something that like when you see it in kids and see them grappling with it, you're like, oh, I'm still grappling with it. This is something that like I am 100% grappling with. And there's two things that I think this will be great for a slight transition in the conversation, because I just realized we're at like 45 minutes and I haven't got to talk to you about like anything that I'd planned, which is perfect. We'll have to do this again. But one, I watched this David Foster Wallace commencement speech recently that really was like super impactful on me. And the whole point of the speech is exactly this, that like we have to change our thinking to not be centered on the self and to be communal thinking. And he uses this beautiful metaphor of like, essentially, the whole point of going to college is to learn that you can change your thought patterns. It's not to be taught how to think. It's to be taught that you can control what you're thinking about. And he uses this like kind of giant story about getting off a job you hate and realizing that like, all you want to do is go home and have a beautiful meal and a nice beer and watch something on TV. But then you realize the fridge is empty and you have to stop at the store. And then there's traffic on the way to the store. And then you're in the store with everyone else that was stuck in traffic. And you're just like going down this negative spiral and you're hating everything. But if you can stop and reframe and say, hey, everybody else is hating this, and like use that thought, that imaginal power that we have to change the way that you're interacting with that situation, that is the value of what you should be gaining from a liberal arts education. And I was like, god damn it, that's like one of the smartest things. But like that is what it's all about, and he nails it so much. And it's exactly that identifying that we're all in it together that allows for those communal evolutions. So the other person that talks about this really beautifully that I think will be a good transition for another part of this conversation is Grant Morrison. Mm-hmm. And he talks about it really specifically in his DisinfoCon speech. And he talks about how this identification of self is what limits us, because once you identify where your self starts and ends, then you are automatically limited and you can no longer like gain the world view of all of these other people, and you're just like constantly segmenting your consciousness when all consciousness is this interlocking thing that we're all tapping into. So it's just a mystery. Like he refers to it as a scaffolding that we built, but then we forgot that it's just scaffolding. We have to remember that the self is just the scaffolding we use to connect to this other thing that is like a connected consciousness. And I love those ideas. And I don't know, that's what popped in my brain there.
Well, and I think about like going back to Wallace with the reframing, right? My dad was always he would always say, listen to the voice you're talking to yourself in. Listen to the voice you're talking to yourself in, which now feels like a lot of wisdom. When he said it a bunch as I was growing up, I was like, got it,
Thanks, Dad.
Got it. Thanks. Yep. Thanks, English Yoda. Settle down. thinking about that reframing and making a choice about how we're going to react to things, right? And how we interact with people. And I really always try, especially when I'm going to spaces where the interactions can be very typical and very almost robotic, like at the grocery store or whatever. And I worked in the customer service industry for a long time. And so one of the things I always try and do, if someone has a name tag on, I always try and call them by their name. If they don't have a name tag, especially if they're like a server, I will ask their name, which a lot of time gets a response like, are you going to complain about me? No. I just don't want to be like, hey, you. I would like to be like, hello, Jim, or, you know, whatever. So actually, you know, give them their personhood back, right?
Yes.
One of the things that I ask at the grocery store, like CVS or whatever, a lot is, how's your day going? Oh, good. Are people being nice? I ask that a lot. And sometimes, you know, you get, oh, you know what? Yeah, people are. It makes kind of folks think about like, oh, yeah, people are. And then, sometimes like, oh, it's been rough today. I'm like, I hear that. You know, just to give them that moment of respite the next person, because I know how much I really appreciated those interactions when I was in that space, and it was just like time and time again. Like get off your phone, pay attention, look someone in the eye. I don't know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that when we see other people, right? And I had this. A friend of mine was super sick and is very stubborn. And I was like, what do you need? And they're like, I need cough drops. I'm like, okay, I'm on my way. So I go to the store, and as I'm getting out of the car, I'm trying to be very situationally aware, because as a lady at night, like I'm looking around, and I see this person is sitting in the car next to me. And I realize it's the security guard for the shopping center. And so they see me. I see them, I smile, I wave, like, hi, and then I go into the store. And I come out, and they have come out of their car, and it was a woman, and she was like, oh my gosh, like, I just want you to have the best New Year's, and it's so great to see you, and then gave me this big hug in the parking lot.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Such a magical moment. I don't know this woman.
Yeah.
But, like, we had this moment because of taking a moment to recognize like the people around me. And it was really, it was really special. And I was really like, wow, I had that moment because I took a moment.
Yes.
And 100%. Like, I think that as we, like one of my favorite things to do, then thinking about what Grant was saying, and like, if we know where we stop and end, is I love to go to things with my friends, even if it's not my thing. Yeah. Like a friend of mine is super into sports fishing, like, and fishing in general, like that's his thing. And he, a couple years, like right before we went into the pandemic, was like, do you want to go to this fishing show with me? And I'm like, yeah. Yeah. And he's like, really? And I'm like, yeah, because I then got to see his world, and I got to people watch, which was fascinating.
That's beautiful.
You know, but like, I will do that. And another friend of mine says, if you want to have a really good life, do what your friends like to do.
Yes, 100%. That's so beautiful. That's like that's a really good piece of advice. I need to remember that one, because it's very true.
It's so true. And I think one of the things that kind of bums me out about being an adult is that I feel like because of how busy our lives are, right? You know, talking about having kids or like responsibilities or all these things, is that I miss just like hanging out. Because I feel like as adults, we suddenly have to be like, oh, we have to have an event to like do before we can hang out. And I'm just like, can't we just sit around, watch TV and like eat Doritos? Like I miss those times. I miss, like, I will go run errands with people because it's not about the activity. It's about I get to spend time with you in the space. Right. Yes. Or 100%. Do you just want to do a lot? Like, hey, let's go here. So much of that as we get older, I feel like just goes away. And I miss it. I miss it so much.
Me too. And those events that we end up planning, they take away from the actual like moment of hanging out. Like that's what I miss. Like exactly. Like I'd much rather just, you know, sit and watch TV with somebody than like plan a giant party and like have, and like it definitely is harder than ever right now. I was just saying this to my buddy. I'm still in a band. It's a very not nearly as functional as we used to be, but like that's the only way I really get to hang out with my friends now is when we have band practice. And like it kind of stinks that that's the only way, but because these are guys that for, you know, over decades of my life, like there was always a house that you could always just walk into and one of the, you know, 10 of them would be there and you'd get to like, you know, hang out and have some good quality time. That's just not a thing that is a thing as you get older, unfortunately. And I mean, I love the time I get to spend with my current friends and like doing things like this. And like, you know, it's wonderful to be able to make new friends and like talk to people, but it's just not something that, unfortunately is accessible anymore. And like, it definitely makes me sad and it makes me, I don't know. It makes me wonder sometimes about like how to reestablish, like how, obviously, that stuff's so important. Like all of the studies show that like the communal living and everything like that is like what we need as much as sleep or a good diet and all of that is like other people. Right. And that's one of the other things I was going to say about Doug Rushkoff's work. He wrote a book called Team Human, has a podcast of the same name. And he very specifically in the book goes through Darwin's evolutionary writings. And he's like, if you read Darwin, he says survival of the fittest like twice in his writings, and then everything else supports that we evolved because of community. The only reason we got to where we got to as a species is because of, you know, our interactions with other people, and that is the point of evolution, not that like the best goes on or the best is the group and like what's best for the group, and like that type of thing is so, it's beautiful when you can feel that with a small group of friends that have a house that you can just go and sit on a couch and, you know, watch some stupid show with, or like it. And I do feel like we miss those opportunities as we get older to feel that same community. And since, like, when I think about how my parents would have experienced it, right, it was through things like the church and through things like these very old structures that just aren't really utilized by people of our generations for lots of good reasons. And
well,
like,
and their community was so much smaller, right? Yes, like maybe it was a church, or my dad was in a service club for many years, right? Yep, so he had that community, and their community was this.
Exactly.
Whereas our community, I'm like, I'm talking to someone in Europe. And they're like, what do you mean? You know? And I think about, but it's also been interesting to watch my mom, I taught my mom how to do eBay years ago, and she's become the eBay queen. Shelly is the eBay queen. And she has made these, you know, intercontinental friendships. She's like, I sold this man in Italy a bell and now we're friends. And so she'll like fill me in on like his life in Italy, living in the mountains of Italy, which is amazing. And I'm like, when are we getting that invite, by the way? But like, but I'm also so grateful that my mom knows everyone on her cul-de-sac. Yeah. I am grateful that there are people around, because my mom lives alone since my dad passed, and like that know where my mom is. And will call me sometimes if they're like, hey, I've been trying to call your mom for a couple of days. Like, is she out of town? Thank you for having eyes. Because I feel like where we, like, and I have, you know, they're nice enough. I don't know them very well. I'm guilty of it too. And we just got newer neighbors and trying to build that bridge with like their kids and Wave. And in our town, we have Santa come through every year. Yeah. Like, it's really cool. And so making sure, like, hey, did you guys get to see Santa? And they were like, we did. And I was like, okay. So I'm like trying to have those interactions.
Absolutely.
But I think we're just not in that same kind of space. And it,
no,
I want to be the change.
No, and I think it is, I don't think, just like one of the things that I meant to talk to you about that I don't think we've touched on and none at all that I think is something I'll have to have you back on. But like the realm of the paranormal, there's so much duality involved. That's all one or nothing. And this is the same thing. It doesn't have to be all one or the nothing. It's not that you have to give up the online friendships or this beautiful community that we've discovered via these digital devices. But there can also be a readjustment and some more investment in the local community. Both can happen at once. And I think so many people just talk about all or none or one or the other. And it's like, no, both are great. Like you can do both correctly. And like, that's the hard part to like remind ourselves that it's not all one or the other that like, yeah, that was it. I don't know.
I think about like, you're talking about, I was thinking about Michigan Paracon this past year. It was my first year getting to go. So fun.
Oh,
and where for me the magic really happened, which everyone had been telling me about anyways, was in the bar afterwards.
Yeah.
After all the everything's done for the day, everyone just hanging out and talking face to face, right?
Yep.
And you know, thinking about going back to you talking about like we hung out in parking lots. You hung out in parking lots and you talked with each other.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You weren't just like in a phone. And like, no. You know what I'm saying? Like I watch students stand in circles. We all do it though. And just like in the phone, I'm like, yes. But you're in front of each other.
Okay. This is great because I think this ties into the paranormal too, because when you're standing in the parking lots and you're like talking to each other without a phone, half of the conversations are about things we don't know the answers to that we're just fucking spitballing and just kind of like making up our own stupid stories or like giving our best to guess at. But like there was no device to pull out of a pocket and say, well, actually I can look this up right now and not have to, you know what I mean? Like that was not a thing. So I think there was just like more curiosity that was not immediately dissolved in this time. So the conversations were easier and like they went longer and got a little deeper sometimes. And like, yeah, I mean, I played in a touring band sometimes for a long time. And to this day, the late night drives and talking was the best thing ever. Like that was better than any of the shows we played or any of the like, you know, big stories from the road or whatever. Like it was those conversations that like formed like a giant chunk of my worldview. And like, you know, if we just had podcasts to listen to when we were doing that, I don't know if those conversations would have been, you know, really arisen the same way, but we had a cassette tape deck. Like that's what we had to, you know,
I've driven cross country three times with three different friends. I've been very fortunate to have those experiences. And the first cross country trip was very like we had a set of CDs that we thought like this will get us through. And then very quickly we were like, we're done with these CDs. And but those conversations, right? Those stopping at a weird roadside attraction, right?
Yep,
and I think about the ties we had. Like the last one I did was just in summer of 2021 because a friend of mine was moving back to Ohio. And I had just said, like, I'll go with you. And he's like, really? I'm like, yeah. Like I'm so good to travel with. Like I'm a very good co-pilot. I will drive. I'm good. I will unwrap the fast food that we've gotten in a way to hand it to you. So as you're driving, it's not messy. Like I'm very good. And I'm super, I joke, Todd, that I'm like the laziest peacock and very low maintenance. And so I'm just like, yeah, if we have to sleep in some weird space, like, all right, whatever. Like, so I feel this is one of like my, I'm really good at travel with, and I can read a room. I know like, okay, you're not in a mood to talk right now. We're going to like, whatever. Like I'm good at travel. So I was like, yeah, let's do it. And so we had like such, and we've known each other 30 years, like friends for 30 years, would spend time doing special effects makeup together, special, you know, like watching movies, going to all kinds of, like we've done tons of things together in the span of our friendship. And I think that that trip was one of the most bonding experiences we've ever had because we were with each other for so much and we had like some adventures on it. Like we got sidetracked through Denver because of an avalanche, like all kinds of things.
Amazing.
That would not have happened had I not just said like, hey, let's do the thing.
Yes.
Let's go on the trip. Right. And and thinking about the paranormal, like at Paracon this year, and it's something she does, but I was like, I'm definitely doing this. Andrea Perrin of the Perrin family from the Harrisville farmhouse. She finished, you know, she was talking in her panel and then, or her lecture. And she was like, yay, after all this is done, we're going to go out to the parking lot and try and contact extraterrestrials. And it's hell like, yeah. When do I get this chance again? I guess the next time Andrea is around, but like standing out there and she tells people like, look through your phone. But I didn't, because I just wanted to be there like in the moment.
Yes.
And one of my favorite moments with another friend happened, and it was just like this beautiful like look of knowing, and like just it was so great. And if I wasn't willing to just be like, let's go stand in a parking lot with a bunch of other people and look towards the sky. Nope.
No, why absolutely.
Why not?
Absolutely. Darcy, this is beautiful. We're over an hour now, and I want like this went by so fast, and
I know.
We didn't talk about half the stuff. Like, I definitely have to have you back on soon.
I would love to.
One of the things that I heard you talk a lot about with Steve Berg was your work with end of life care and your interest in Ram Dass. And that's something that is there were several things where I almost brought him when you were talking about, were we recording when you were talking about the way that hospitals view death and how that was always one of my favorite Ram Dass raps. Yeah. Like I've brought that up on here before, how that was my first time hearing that idea from a Ram Dass talk where he was like, we literally call them failures. We call death failure in this Western society. And that's just not how most of the world or the history of humanity has looked at it. Like, it's a very, you know, that's our view on this.
It's very Western. And it's, I think it's also very American.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of things that, like, when we talk about center of the universe.
Yeah.
Whoo! Yeah. America.
Sadder when you probably when you dig in a little deeper and you're probably and you start realizing that a lot of it comes down to, you know, whether it's what's called funding or other things, like those numbers impact money that those healthcare establishments get, and like death and all. Even I was listening to something about the way we treat emergency rooms, and there was this big movement where there was an incentivization to make beds get people treated quicker, right? And get people in the beds from ER rooms quicker. So what they ended up doing was changing the definition of the bed. And instead of a bed being a room that you get to, a bed now qualifies as the gurneys in the hallway because they took the wheels off the gurneys. So if there's no wheels on it, then that's a bed. So the hospital, and now if you go to the ER room, there's as many people in the hallways as there is in rooms. It's because they tried to legislate this idea to move people and get them healthcare quicker. And because it was a more financial incentive to do it this way, that's the way that it responded, because our healthcare, it lives inside of a capitalistic system. So it's going to act the way any capitalistic structure works.
I'm going to have to really process that, because the last time I was in the ER, I was in a hallway and I was like, it was more about COVID procedure. COVID
was way
protocol.
Before that, apparently. And wow. I should not be speaking in such definitives, because this is just something I heard somebody say in a talk. So who knows? But it makes sense. And it's the type of thing that, again, it shows you how malleable that language is and how you can take advantage of things. Like, somebody was passing a bill thinking they were doing something that was going to, or not a bill, but they were making an incentive that they thought was going to positively impact, but put inside the structure that we exist in. The structure took that idea and said, no, we'll just do it this way because we need money.
Well, and I think one of the things too, and I know we're over time, so if you'll grant me.
Oh, no, we're good. We're good. I mainly don't want to keep you longer than you have. So, okay, cool.
I'm good. Thank you. I'm good. Yeah. So if you're just like, we got to wrap this, like I'm good. No.
Until I hear the kids screaming, I have no particular.
You just run off. I'm like, oh,
Kid sorry, bye.
Bye. Oh, hey, everyone. It's just Darcy here now. Todd had to step away, but we'll wrap these things up. No, but so thinking about end of life, thinking about, you know, the things we were just talking about. One, I think as a culture, we're grief avoidant, we're death avoidant. I talk about that a lot because we are like, I'm not the one who's like, here's my idea. Like we are as a culture because death doesn't exist within our realms as a city. Like it's on the outside, it's on the outskirts. And grief is something you're supposed to just process through, right? Bereavement leave is a joke. Yeah. I can recite my bereavement leave at my work verbatim. But it doesn't count for other things like not immediate family or a significantly close relative. Like it doesn't deal with something like disenfranchised grief, which is grief that falls outside of societal norms of grieving. Right. Wow. But I also think we don't fully understand all of the end of life options we can have. And it's something that I've looked at with media, especially about how do we see end of life care through media? Because most of our medical shows are taking place in the ER or a hospital. It's not necessarily in home hospice or in a hospice care facility or things. And not that a hospice care facility is not still kind of a form of like a hospital, but it's different.
Yeah.
And so I don't think we consider our end of life options. I'm very pro death with dignity. We're fortunate in California that we have that option. Not everyone does. Like not even half the states have death with dignity. Totally. And I know this gets into conversations with people about, you know, how we, oh, it's suicide. It's not suicide. Suicide is different. And even like I'm even careful because I've lost friends to suicide. Like I've had a number of friends another friend of mine put it, you know, they tried the best they could for as long as they could. And I try and sit in that when I'm having a hard time with that. But, you know, when we don't even know all the ways we could die or that we have an option or, you know, and we get so caught up in magical thinking too. Like, I'm sorry, I'm tripping over my words, but there's so many things in my brain, like this stuff, right?
This is beautiful. Absolutely.
And so I think about, you know, one of the things I appreciate about Ram Dass, and it's the same thing with like Tibetan monks, right? Is the idea of contemplating your own death. Sitting like Tibetan monks sit and contemplate their own death 7 times a day. Right. We might think about death every day. I do. But I mean, it's the work I do. But also like just because you're thinking about death doesn't mean you want to die or you're ready to die. It's just like, oh, eventually I'm going to die. Yeah. And if anything, I think the pandemic brought into sharp focus is that things can take us out at any moment. Like at any moment, I could, you know, step off the curb and get hit by a car I didn't see was coming. I could be stricken with something that I am unaware is happening in my body. And I think that, and again, I'm not afraid to die. I don't want to go yet. Like I feel I've got a lot more stuff I want to do. But that is also part of the sociological look at dying a good death in modern times is like kind of living an unfinished life. And that is not to say like living with regrets.
Yes.
Like you don't want to be the person at the end of the Hallmark movie that's like, I should have, if only, like, that's not the goal, but more like, hey, there was still more to do.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm of an age that just made me sound 85 years old. I'm of an age where I have friends. I've always had like a lot of my friends have always been older than me and they continue to be older than me. Yeah. But like, you know, some of them are looking towards retirement. And I was having this conversation with my brother the other day and he's like, I don't want to retire. Cause he said, you know, he goes, I hear these people say, you know, oh, I can't wait to go to bed not tired. And he's like, that's why you go to bed. Because you've had such a good day, a busy day, or a fulfilled day that you're tired. And then you get rest. And then you do it again. And I'm like, yeah, right?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
And so, you know, thinking about, like, I mean, do I want to, like, have to have a job the rest of my life? Not necessarily, but I want to keep living. I don't want to get to this place where I'm like, I'm done now. Like, that's just, that to me is, I don't want that. I feel like that's sad. Like, because there's, and that's again, also think going back to what you're saying about defining about where you start and where you end.
Yeah.
And I'm a big feeler. And so, yeah, having like feeling so much can be debilitating at times. But that also means on the flip side, I also get to feel incredible joy, have those goosebumps moments, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where I think as we look at how we die says so much about how we've lived. And, you know, anthropologists say, if you want to look at how culture treats someone, look at how they treat them in death, right? And that gets into racism and, you know, homophobia and transphobia and all these things. But at the same time, like, you know, one of the things when I introduce myself to students in a class, like my first class is always like, yes, we're going over the syllabus, but I want to let them know who I am because I'm going to ask to know who they are in some form through the semester. And by letting them know who I am, that's a transference of power, right? Like that's me being vulnerable and saying like, hey, I am like you. I didn't come out of the womb doing this, but I have them answer some biographical questions and I will ask them like, what, you know, either what do you hope to learn from this class or what are your goals for the future? Right. And especially when I was teaching in the business department, I taught career and professional development, by the way, like people are like, you taught in business. I'm like, I wasn't teaching econ. No one's letting me do accounting classes. Don't worry about that. But like teaching them how to like, write resumes and cover letters and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, and ask like, what are your career goals? And it would be like, to be rich, to be this, But the question I always end on is, how do you want to be remembered? How do you want to be remembered? Yeah. And that flips the mindset.
Totally.
Because the students that come out saying like, oh, I want to be so rich and I want to, you know, Bugattis and yachts doesn't say, I've not had one so far yet say, I want to be remembered as the person with the Bugattis and yachts.
Yeah.
They say, I want to be remembered as kind, as helpful, as changing the world. And I think that if we contemplate how we want to be remembered, that helps us contemplate how we want to live.
Yes, 100%.
And I think 100%. That part of that is also understanding what our core truths are and are we acting out of those truths? And I think about like for myself, like love and compassion, justice, creativity, and service. Like those are pretty much my core truths.
Yeah.
And so if I'm not operating in one of those, something is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm and not with the world, with me. Like I'm not operating out of who I am. And usually if I'm operating in a space that's not who I am, those things don't last.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And it is all about that alignment and like figuring out like how things are not always supposed to be hard. That's something that like was, there's so many, again, one of my favorite Ram Dass raps is he talks about cultural narratives and the death of certain cultural narratives, like the white picket fence and the 1950s American dream and like all these things. And there's these really harmful narratives. And I think that life is supposed to be hard or things are just difficult is right. One of them, honestly, because like you'll be fighting something for so long and you'll just be like, I guess this is just how it is. Everyone says life is hard. But then if you really do take a minute and try and realign to, if you have like taken the time to reflect and set some of those core values to align to, then you might see that, no, this is just, I'm not in alignment with what I, my values are. And that's why it's hard right now. And it's not about pushing your way through. It's about changing the situation and like take, whether it's removing yourself from a situation or all these different things.
Well, and I think it's one of the things, and I see this with, you know, it's the idea between like growth mindset and fixed mindset. Right? Fixed mindset says things will always be hard. Growth mindset says things can change. But it's one of those things we love to throw those things around in our culture.
Yeah.
However, what we don't do is teach people how to strengthen those things.
Yeah.
So it's like, the analogy I give to my students, if I'm talking to them about growth mindset versus fixed mindset, is I might want to go to the gym and bench press 500 pounds. That might be my goal. Do you think I can bench press 500 pounds today? And they're like, no. And I'm like, exactly. I would have to work my way up to it. Like, let's maybe start with the bar. I said, again, that's an extreme goal, but I can't just do it right away. And for someone to tell somebody, well, you just have to change your mindset.
Yeah.
Cool. And this is where it's one of the things in psychology that I love, which is the idea of psychological strokes. Mm-hmm. And so psychological strokes are the things that validate us and also invalidate us. So, for example, if you grew up your whole life with people around you telling you you're great, you're awesome, you're smart, you're handsome, you're beautiful, you're capable, all those things. And someone comes along and says, you're not any of those things. You go, nah. I know, because I have gotten so many psychological strokes telling me the other way that like, I'm not buying your negativity, right?
Totally.
You can be PMA all day long. But yeah. On the flip side of that, if you have grown up with a lot of trauma, I do a lot of trauma-informed work. And so if you've grown up with people telling you you're worthless, you're useless, you're this, you're like all the negative tapes playing, right? All the negative strokes. And someone comes along and says, no, I believe in you. You're capable. You go, no, I don't believe that, because you've gotten more things the other way. And so to shift those, and the other thing on this is that as humans, we will go towards negative psychological strokes before no psychological strokes. So even if it's not healthy for us, being acknowledged in some way is better than being acknowledged in no way for us.
Yeah.
Wow. And so we have to be aware, like, yeah, I can sit here and go like being very self-aware, like these are my core truths and all this, but I struggle with self-worth. I struggle with the things that have happened to me in the past. And there are days that I don't win. There are days I don't win. Right.
Absolutely.
And I think that being able to, you know, go like, okay, today wasn't my best day, but you know what? I'm going to try again. I'm going to start again tomorrow.
Yep.
And I think also too, that one of the things in growth mindset and in these things that frustrates me is the movement of toxic positivity, where people are using spiritual bypass or, and this goes back to what we were talking about in the, you know, before we started recording about the church. And just like, but I see it in New Age stuff. I see it in the woo as well. Like, just do these things and it will be fine. It's like, no, people have to do work. Mm-hmm. Therapy is great. Medication for some people is great. Like, all of these things are tools to help and to like clean out the wounds, right? And get new sets of tools, right? Yeah. Like, I think about, you know, the analogy I use with people when I'm talking about like therapy is, I was like, therapy is not about someone telling you, you know, labeling you these harmful things, like you're crazy, you're nuts, change your whole life. Like, that's not what it's about. It's about getting a new set of tools for a new set of circumstances you're in. And so the analogy I use a lot of times is that if you're building a dollhouse with beautiful, intricate miniatures, you're not going to use a chainsaw to build those miniatures, right? You're going to get a new set of tools. Just like, depending on what kind of artwork you're doing, you're not going to use the same pen, brush, medium. Like, it's not going to be the same because it's 100%. Not what you're trying to accomplish. And so if people need those things, and that's what is help, those tools are helping them, fantastic. please. Yes. Because at the end of the day, I want people on my left and my right and people I love and care about to be happy, healthy people. Because what they do, what they accomplish, all those things doesn't matter if they're hurting. It doesn't matter if they're falling apart or feeling like the world is so much they don't want to be in it anymore.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the more that you look into it, no one actually accomplishes anything like that. Like I always like, again, these harmful narratives that pop up and you see them in the art world a lot as far as like, to, you know, you have to be a tortured artist to make like great works and things like that. None of that is ever like if you look at the people that they'll hold up as examples, whether it's as cliche as Van Gogh, like none of it's ever true. Like he was, you know, creating while he was at a psychiatric facility at the time.
Yeah.
Like he was getting help. Like he was utilizing, no one makes anything when they are in the throes of whatever kind of emotional or psychological problems that they have going on. Really. Like it's the type of thing that like, I think gets conflated and gets, it's like people see it as an instant access to meaning or something, you know,
oh,
and it's
for
just,
sure.
It's just not, it's like, well, it's the, go ahead.
And we never really truly know the ins and the outs of that person's life anyways. We get
exactly,
a snippet of it, right? It's not like you're like, oh, did you live with them? Were you when they couldn't get out of bed or they hadn't showered in 2 weeks? You weren't there.
100%. No, I think that is such a beautiful place to kind of wrap this conversation up because it's something that I try and keep in mind when talking about these bigger and these weirder ideas. And the whole idea is to essentially make like whatever you're pursuing or thinking about, it should be to make your day, the people around you's day better. Like it should be the type of thing that you're just trying to, and I guess I use this turn of phrase a lot, but you're trying to remember how magical or enchanted the world naturally is. And like, these are the ways to do it. Like these, and I think there's something beautiful about integrating thinking about death and all of these kind of scarier sides of things for us humans that haven't kind of grappled with those thoughts as much. And I think there's something that is inherently beneficial about just talking about it. And yeah, I love that you're out there doing that. Like it's important, and it's the type of thing that I think should be kind of lauded a little bit more. It's the type of thing where like I'm interested in the fact that there's not more conversations around this these topics, in whether it's the world of the weird or art. Like I listen to a lot of creativity podcasts and a lot of artist podcasts, and they don't talk about it neither. Like it is this thing that like people dance around and like is on the edge of everything, but it needs to be folded in a little bit more. And I like that you're out there doing it in such a positive and meaningful way.
I really appreciate that. And my hope is that people can show up exactly how they are, like when they're around me.
Yeah.
And I think that is one of the things that we've really been conditioned to not do. We've been conditioned to like, everything's good. How's life? Oh, things are good. And you know, and to be fair, not everyone can sit with you in the hard parts and the not magical parts.
Yeah.
And the difficult parts. And I see it with death, but I also see it with mental health challenges or frustrations or whatever it is. I think we are expected in so many ways to show up in the best version of ourselves all the time. And the reality is that's not how we are, right? And going back to what we're talking about with just hanging out.
Yeah.
When you hung out with your friends, it was just like, we're hanging out. We're just being exactly who we are as we are. And 100%. I think the more we can start to I hate to use the term normal because it means that something else is abnormal. And as a weirdo, but like the more that we can start to normalize just getting to be exactly how we are and not having to be on all the time. Again, we can get back to our humanness and our truer connections with one another.
Yes, that's beautiful. All right, we're going to wrap it up there, Darcy, because I feel like that is a perfect ending statement. We'll have to do this again really soon. Because
I would love to come back on.
Did you read Monica yet? I saw that you posted that you got the new Daniel Clowes book. Have you had a chance to make it through it yet?
I am mostly through it. And that I have to say really quick, the thing with Monica that I've not had with his other books in recent years, because I've loved him for so long.
Absolutely.
Is that normally on a Clowes book, I fly through it.
Uh-huh.
I am really processing this in a very different way. So I'm getting close to the end, but I have not felt that like, okay, we're just like, and I do that a lot with graphic novels. This one is very different. So I'm excited to finish it and talk with you about it.
You just gave me goosebumps because I literally made it to the last chapter and just stopped reading it and was like, I don't want it. Like, it took me like 2 weeks in between to like finish it. And now I've reread it. Like, I've read it twice all the way through and I haven't had anybody to really talk to about it. I want to do an episode about it because it's beautiful. It's got so many themes that I love and that is very related to the paranormal. And not to get too into a whole thing, but like the way that he utilizes tropes like EVPs and puts it in a way without like that whole communication with her grandfather and things like that. Like, it's like he's obviously aware of these things, but the way he's integrating it into this world and this story is not like someone like, oh, I'm on a ghost hunt, EVP. It's like this very, very emotional and like almost like he tapped into what it's all about without actually knowing that he did. You know what I mean? Like, it's so beautiful. And
I absolutely want to have a conversation about that.
Cool. When you finish it, let me know and we'll set that up and we'll have another fun conversation. And hopefully a lot more too, because I'd love to have you on for a couple. Like, one of the things I'm going to start trying to do more of is some round tables with some friends that I wear, since like we have so many like-minded connections here, just start having the digital version of those hanging out and watching TVs and stuff, you know.
Let's do it.
As much as we just kind of talked about the benefit of the non-digital version, we might as well utilize the one that we can do at this point too. But tell everybody where to find your work, what you got going on, and anything you want to share, and I'll make sure I link it and all that good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So on social media, on Instagram and Twitter, I'm at Darcy Staniforth. So DarcyStaniforth. And on the TikTok app, which I'm not quite as active on, but you can still find me there as Miss Darcy Staniforth, because apparently Darcy Staniforth was already taken. And then if you want to come on one of my haunted historical tours with Haunted OC, you can look at hauntedoc.com under Ghost Walks, and the Kellogg House is the tour that I am the ghost host for.
We didn't even get to talk about any of that, but you know, I'll link the recent Bigfoot Collectors Club episode with that, because that was so good. And like, and the Steve Berg, because I feel like people, they'll find out a lot more about you through those podcasts. And this is kind of like, we just dove in. I like to think about these podcasts. I once heard somebody give advice where if you're writing a short story, you should just dive in like it's the last chapter of a fully formed novel.
Yeah.
Like, don't take time to like build stories or give background details. Just set it like your audience knows the characters already. And that's kind of how I handle these podcasts.
I love it.
I'm talking to people and I just assume the audience is familiar with that you run ghost tours and do all this stuff. And then sometimes I'm like, I guess I should ask some more background information, but I think you have plenty out there that people can go kind of consume and enjoy, because all of the conversations are just beautiful. And I can't wait to do this again. Thank you so much and enjoy whatever you get to do today. I hope it's something fun.
The plan is for thrifting and garage sailing today.
Oh, beautiful. Enjoy. It's so funny. California life, like it's currently like snowing and sleeting outside, and thinking about garage sailing right now, I'm like, nope, that's not a thing.
I'm not doing that today. Yeah.
But have fun. I hope you find some really cool old comics and weird stuff that you're into.
Cool. Thanks so much, Todd. Thanks for having me on. And I can't wait for us to talk again.
Absolutely. All right, I'll talk to you guys.
Bye.